Looks to get it in. They get it to Boyd. Boyd gets it to Kyer. Kyer with three to Livingston. Long desperation three. It's good!
Hey 10. GiantKiller.co and the By George Podcasting Network presents an Atlantic 10 original. The Hey 10 Podcast featuring Petey Buckets and Grant LeBenz.
Tosses it in and it's over. Davidson is going to the dance. They win the Atlantic 10 Tournament Championship.
Welcome back to a very special episode of Hey 10, everybody. I'm here with my buddy Grant LeBenz. Grant, say what's up.
How's it going, guys?
We are very excited for another season of A10 basketball. It's about to kick off here in a couple days. Grant, where are you going to be watching Davidson at Auburn?
Currently, the plan is to go with some buddies to Buffalo Wild Wings and take in that first game with some Wings Beer Sports. Really looking forward to the start of the season. But, you know, honestly, I'm just probably going to barricade myself in my room on Tuesday night, try to catch as many games as I can. And then, man, we got basketball back. We got, you know, a game every night.
Basketball's back, man.
I'm excited. That's right. How about Mason Navy? Are you going to end up getting to the game?
Yeah, I think I'll be there. I turned in my season tickets for the first time basically since I graduated.
Wow.
And I'm going to be media full-time this year.
There you go.
So I'm going to be sitting on press row there, courtside, kind of courtside behind the benches. So pretty nice nice setup at the Patriot Center. So I should be there for Mason Navy. Hopefully I don't get my heart stomped on like we did in the season opener last year, where the season was basically over before it started after those first three games.
That was true. That was not fun.
But yeah, so excited to break down another season of A10 basketball. We have come prepared today to talk through a few of the top teams in the conference, as well as some of the burning questions from the offseason, to help you, our faithful listeners, get prepared and fully understand exactly what we are in store for this season. So, Grant, why don't you go ahead and kick us off. Tell us what we're going to be talking about first.
Yeah, so we're just going to go through, break down the teams one by one, you know, give our thoughts on each. And to save any bias that we might potentially have, we are going to go in order of the coaches' rankings, so how they had them at A10 Media Day. And we're going to kick it off with VCU. The VCU Rams ranked 25th in the preseason AP poll. Obviously the favorite to win the conference after winning it last year and returning basically everybody. A big issue for VCU last year was three-point shooting. I know they struggled with that immensely, especially in non-conference play. But obviously the Rams were able to ride their defense through A10 play, get that at-large bid, and really some high expectations for them this year.
Yeah, VCU is interesting. They were silly good defensively last season.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think people realize that they were an elite defense on a national scale last year. I got some numbers. That's going to be a total shock to people.
PD's numbers.
But I
love it.
I looked at some numbers. Third in opponent effective field goal percentage. And it's good at all three levels. So seventh in the nation in opponent field goal percentage at the rim, second in opponent field 3-point percentage, first in the nation at stopping your opponents in transition. So lowest opponent transition field goal percentage in the country. So their defense is absolutely, you know, can compete with anyone. And I think you nailed it. They need 3-point shooting.
Mm-hmm.
Their defense masked what was for a large parts of the season a very mediocre offense. They're about 219th in the country, I think, in offensive efficiency. So actually, you know, below average on a national scale.
Right. And you know, seeing some highlights on Twitter, I think Keyshawn Curry had a pretty good first game in the exhibition match for VCU. So that's a name to keep an eye on. And freshman Bones Highland has been getting a lot of hype for the VCU Rams. He is going to be a reliable point guard backup this year.
He was a 4-star, right?
4-star recruit. I think the highest rated in the conference according to 247 Sports. So a guy to keep an eye on, especially if he's filling it up from downtown. VCU is going to be dangerous, and I obviously agree with their pick at number one.
Yeah, for sure. They needed to fill that backup point guard spot because they looked pretty pedestrian when Marcus Evans went down last season. PJ Bird was not ready for the spotlight, but he's not around anymore. He moved out They brought in the four-star Bones Highland. Mm-hmm. So they upgraded there. I think if they, you know, if they get the shooting they need, if the offense starts clicking, there's a chance for a really special season here.
I'd agree. Looking forward to it. Let's move on to number two. We've got the Davidson Wildcats, my team, opening up the season against Auburn in Annapolis for a really, really good first test. Wildcats came in to the season in the AP poll, receiving some votes. I think they got 30-something, so you know, a couple spots out. And really a good opportunity against number 24 Auburn, but we'll break that game down a little bit later in the podcast. A lot of exciting pieces coming back for Davidson. Obviously, John Axel Goodmanson, reigning A-10 Player of the Year, is going to come back and have a really good shot at repeating for that title. But I think the piece that everybody's looking forward to and figuring out if he's going to improve from last year is Kellen Grady. Obviously, mm-hmm. dealing with a nagging injury last year really kept him from his full potential. And I don't think we've yet to see Davidson be as good as it can when both Kellen Grady and Jag are firing on all cylinders. So.
Yeah, and Grady missed the worst possible stretch of your out-of-conference last mm-hmm. year, right? You weren't competitive against North Carolina. You lost a winnable game against Temple. I feel like there was another one that I'm forgetting.
It was Wake Forest on the road as well,
yeah. Wake Forest on the road, yeah. So, yeah, you had three opportunities to, you know, potentially build a pretty solid at-large resume, and
yeah.
Grady missed all three of those games, which is just the worst possible time for him to go down.
Exactly. And you know, backcourt obviously is the focal point for Bob McKillop's offense this year. I think my questions still remain in the front court, where Luka Brajkovic, the returning sophomore, had a really strong and promising year. Dusan Kovacevic is no longer around, so you lose a little bit of depth there. And, you know, I'm still kind of wondering who's going to be that second man to step up in the front court, if it's David Christensen, the freshman. If it's Bates Jones getting a little bit more playing time, we'll definitely have to see who's riding down there. But, you know, I went to the exhibition or the red and black scrimmage the other day, and Carter Collins was the standout, in my opinion. I think he had 13 points or something like that and almost threw down this massive dunk that would have brought the house down. But
yeah,
I'd look for him to have a big season, big improvement.
So, question about Davidson is how does their depth look this year? Because this was kind of a theme across the A-10, but the top teams outside of VCU just had no bench at all.
Like, yeah.
Davidson effectively went six deep last year.
It really depends. I think a lot of it's going to ride on these two freshmen. Like I mentioned, David Christensen and Hyunjung Lee. Haven't seen much of them yet. Obviously, Davidson's exhibition game is tomorrow, so I really only got to see them play a little bit in the red and black scrimmage, but if those two can become reliable pieces off the bench, I think their depth's looking pretty good. You know, if they're a little bit more limited in their roles and, you know, take some time to get used to playing collegiate basketball, it might be a bit of an issue, but I think Davidson has the bodies this year. You got Michael Jones was a guy that was hurt last year who didn't get to play. He's back. I think you got a lot of guys that can come off the bench and hit threes, and usually that's how Bob McKillop offenses tend to work. Should have good depth this year. We'll just see how good these guys can actually be, and if you know they can provide reliable minutes, not just bodies on the floor when the starters have to go to the bench.
Yeah, they were only 33% from three out of conference last year. Mm-hmm. They heated up 37% in conference. Their five starters plus Carter Collins all coming back this year. They all shot between 34% and 37%. So they're a good, not great, 3-point shooting team. You figure that's probably going to get a little bit better.
I would think so.
One of my favorite stats from last season was, hold on, let me find it. Luke Frampton took 298 shots last season.
Wow.
Guess how many were from three?
Probably 250.
More. you're low.
Wow.
It was more. It was 266.
Wow. Yeah, he is not a 2-point shooter. I'll tell you that much.
He does not go inside the arc. So he's just bombs away. So it'll be interesting to see if he can add another dimension to his game. I think he's a really good player, very effective. Like, when you're only shooting threes and you're still shooting, you know, over 35% on volume, mm-hmm. when the defense knows that that's all you're out there to do, you know, it's still pretty good.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how he evolves. Overall, I think Davidson last season kind of struggled with big and athletic teams. And you kind of, like, think about St. Louis just kind of kicking their ass in the mm-hmm. semis in the A-10 tournament. So, you know, I think, you know, we know they're going to be fundamental. We know they're going to be well coached. The depth question and the athleticism question, I think, is those are the open items on our evaluation of Davidson at the moment, I think.
Yeah. I still definitely agree with them at two in the rankings for the coaches poll. I think, you know, they're the second team to beat in the A-10 behind VCU, and I think a really good shot at making the tournament this year.
I think so, too. Pretty clear 1 and 2, in my opinion.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to the Dayton Flyers at number 3. Dayton coming in with a lot of new faces. You've got 4 key transfers coming in from some high major programs. You got Ibby Watson from Michigan, Chase Johnson from Florida. Some guys that are supposed to turn some heads, even though they haven't gotten a lot of playing time at the respective Power 5 schools. And obviously you've got Obi Toppin coming back, who a lot are predicting to be the A-10 tournament player of the year, A-10 player of the year this year, and definitely getting some interest from NBA scouts, apparently showing up to practices. What do you think about the Flyers this year, Petey?
Are the Flyers the first team in college basketball to have an EB and an OB in the same season?
I would think so. I mean, that's like a Ken Pom ask right there. You gotta have somebody go dig that.
Well, we'll try and figure that out.
We'll get a Hey 10 podcast intern next year. Come back
next week to find out. So I think Dayton's really interesting because I think, like you said, Chase Johnson, Ibby Watson, getting a lot of hype, I think, if you, mm-hmm. you know, follow Dayton fans on Twitter. But then when you look at the numbers, they didn't do much at their first stops, right? They both played 2 seasons. Chase Johnson got 45 minutes total in his 2 seasons at Florida. That's not to say that he won't be good. It's just we don't really know, right? Mm-hmm. He was a highly rated recruit that went to a very good basketball school and couldn't get on the floor. Same thing with Ibby Watson. Ibby Watson was 10 for 31 from 3 as a sophomore, but he only played,
probably garbage minutes.
He only played a few minutes a game, yeah, so it's really tough to say. Then they also have Rodney Chapman from Chattanooga, mm-hmm. so smaller school, but 13 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists as a sophomore, shooting 34% from 3. So smaller school, but a guy who actually had some production at his previous stop, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got Jordy Shimanga. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly.
We will figure it out eventually.
I actually have no idea if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Jordy Shimanga, only about 13 minutes per game in 2 seasons, but he's got really good block and rebound rates. So if those extrapolate and he stays at that level, he'll be a pretty good player.
Mm-hmm.
Really, for me this year, it's all about Obi, probably the most fun player in the A-10. Just wildly good at getting to the rim. 60% of his shots come at the rim, and he shoots 80%. So the dude just gets to the rim and dunks, and it's so tough to stop him.
Yeah. I think Dayton, one thing that they'll have to look at is three-point shooting again this year. Obviously, that wasn't mm-hmm. as much of a focal point. They shot 33.2% as a team, but why throw up threes when you've got a guy that's 6'9" and can jump through the roof, and Obi Toppin, like we mentioned. But I think adding a guy like Ibby Watson will help. I didn't see the final stats from their exhibition game, but I saw he was shooting pretty well. I think mm-hmm. he was like 3 or 4 or 4 or 5, something like that, at half. So adding some perimeter threats will definitely help. You force the defense to actually come out and guard guys like that, and it'll open up Obi Toppin in the lane to come through and clean up any misses or get a couple lob dunks. But Dayton has go on.
Oh, I was just going to say, they've got a couple of very good role players in Jalen Crutcher and Ryan Mikesell.
Yeah.
So two guys who probably aren't going to be stars at any point, but, make the players around them better and mm-hmm. are the kind of players that exist on good teams. Mm-hmm. So I like their roster. I think the three-point shooting is a valid point. Always a good question about how the how are transfers going to integrate in their first year on the court? How do they – did they click? Do they share the ball well? Do they make do they play together well? All valid questions, and I think Dayton in third is kind of safe because obviously OB, I think, is one of the best players in the A-10. But a fair amount of question marks. Maybe a few more question marks than people are thinking.
And they're going to have to shake off the rust early. I mean, they've got some really, really good non-conference tests. They're going out to Maui. They'll play Georgia in the Maui Invitational. And
yep.
they win that game, they get Michigan State. And then you got St. Mary's, who's a top 20 team, and you've got Colorado, who's just outside the top 25. Both neutral matchups, both projected losses in KenPom. So, Dayton really wants to turn heads, and Anthony Grant wants to get back to the NCAA tournament with this team. You got to win games like that, and you got to have the transfers clicking with the returning guys pretty much immediately.
And Dayton's due for some good luck. They lost close games in every single opportunity they had to build an at-large resume last season.
That's true.
They lost to UVA, Oklahoma, Mississippi State. They blew a late lead, and then Auburn, all by, I think, 10 points or less.
Yeah.
So that's Dayton.
That is Dayton, and we will move on to number four. We've got Rhode Island Rams. Rhodey looking for a good season after getting hot at the end of last year. Really, I think we've talked about this a lot on the podcast. Rhode Island tends to go about as far as Fats Russell will take them. Obviously, Jeff Doughton, Sarah Langevin, probably the two best players on Rhode Island, and maybe, you know, two of the top 10, 8-10 players this season. But when you've got Fats Russell playing well in that third option, Rhodey tends to do something special. They won six of their last seven games, obviously losing to St. Bonaventure in the A-10 tournament last year and ending their season. But getting a few key pieces as freshmen to join this roster and pretty much returning everybody else, Rhode Island has a chance to make the big dance this year.
Yeah, I think Fats is one of the most, in some ways, Fats might be the most important player in the A-10 simply because he got so many shots last year and he was so inefficient with them.
Yeah.
I did a look up on College Basketball Reference on their player season finder, and guys who get almost 14 shots a game who shoot less than 34% overall from the field, it's been a handful of guys over the years. So Fats getting all those shots and not being efficient with them really killed Rhodey last season. I think either one of two things is going to happen. Either Fats is going to, he's going to get better. His shot volume is going to stay the same, but he's going to get a lot more efficient. Or it's not, and those shots are going to go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And I think it has to be one of those two things, because if Fats is the same player that he was last year, then, Rhodey has a hard ceiling if Fats' shots don't get better or don't go somewhere else. So in some ways, Fats, I think, is probably the most important player in the A-10 because he was kind of a ball stopper last year. Jeff Doughton, who I think is one of the most talented guys in the A-10, was taking kind of a backseat to Fats, which I thought was kind of weird. Mm-hmm. And it was also, also kind of strange that Cox just let him shoot so much. Fats was, and I feel like we kind of crap on Fats every single time we talk about
him. I know, we shouldn't. He's a good player.
But the dude was, still, like, late in the season, he shot 22% from three on the year. And still, even at the end of the season, he would be taking contested step-back threes with, like, 24 seconds left on the shot clock, mm-hmm.
He did get hot at the end of the year, which definitely helped. But, Rhode Island as a team overall shot 28% from three, which was 351st in the nation. That's just
almost the worst in the nation.
The worst. And obviously that's just not going to cut it if you want to make the big dance this year. I think Langevin is a focal point. Really playing through him should be a necessity for David Cox. Fats Russell was kind of going off at the end of last year, but Langevin had 26, 21, 25 points in some of those key wins that helped Rhode Island get some momentum going into the final couple games and going into the A-10 tournament. So,
yeah,
really looking for him in the post, and guys like Jermaine Harris, guys like Tyrese Martin really stepping up and getting some looks as well should be key.
That rising sophomore class is going to determine. So, we talked about Fats a lot, which I think is warranted. I think the rising sophomores determine everything else, because you're going to get great steady production from Jeff Doughton. You know what you're going to get from Langevin. I think those rising sophomores, I think that Tate and Martin shot about 30% combined from three on the season. They need to take a step forward on three-point shooting. Langevin, I think, he's going to be great. One thing that I think I want to mention about him is he kind of got his ass kicked by Marcus Santos Silva from VCU in the A-10 tournament.
Yeah.
Which I thought was hilarious, because Langevin still ended up getting first team in the tournament, even though he was guarding the dude who put up like 26 points and 22 rebounds in one game. I think Rhode Island's going to be a very good defensive team again. They're big. They're physical. They're going to be a little bit, I think, maybe a little bit like St. Louis was last year. They're just going to be bigger and more physical than everybody else in the A-10. Mm-hmm. Whether or not their ability to score comes along with that, I think, is their big question.
I'd agree. Offense will be key. Let's move on to
also,
number
Last thing. They put together the best out-of-conference schedule.
That is true. They are going to get battle-tested.
Maryland, LSU, West Virginia, Alabama, Providence, and even traditionally good mids like Middle Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Kudos to
a potential Utah State in there, too.
Oh, really?
If they beat LSU.
Kudos to David Cox for putting together that schedule.
That is true. It's going to be fun to watch. Let's move on to number five, St. Bonaventure, the Bonnies. After almost making the NCAA tournament, winning the A-10 tournament last year, we see a a corner three go down and we have a different story. But the Bonnies returning a lot of key rising sophomores that turned a lot of heads last year. And, you know, it makes us all question, how does Mark Schmidt do it? But Kyle Lofton, Osun Oshinee, and Dominic Welch were three of the best freshmen in the league last year, and they're all coming back. Bonnie's adding a few key pieces and some transfers and some freshmen that you know, have generated some hype as well. And all of a sudden, this team looks like it could be pretty good.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we know what we're getting from Kyle Lofton. I think we know what we're getting from Osun. And I think everybody else, you know, there's question marks everywhere else, right? You know, a lot of guys who are supposed to be good recruits, a lot of guys getting hype. I liked Bonaventure a lot more, I think, when we recorded a few months ago, when I was still kind of riding the high of like, yeah, Kyle Lofton's going to be great. Osun's going to be great. And then, you know, you started digging into a little bit more and just a lot of question marks. Dom Welch didn't really put up numbers last year. He came on at the end of last season.
Yeah.
Shot 36% from three. He's a guard. He can play really big. He blocked Cyril Langevin at the rim a couple times in the A-10 tournament last year, which I thought was just wildly impressive. He's like a legit 6'4", 6'5". But, you know, we still don't know, in a bigger role, the kind of player he's going to be night in and night out, you know. And then otherwise, it's a lot of guys who either got small minutes last year or, you know, it's their first time in the program.
Yeah, I think you make a good point, too. I mean, there's a lot of question marks on who's going to replace the production from Courtney Stockard and Ladarian Griffin. I think Ladarian Griffin, of all players in the A-10, is one guy whose contributions just really don't show up on the stat sheet. I mean, he's long, he affects shots, and he was kind of that missing piece down low that could kind of fill in when Osun wasn't on the court or maybe when Osun hadn't developed as much. You know, so he's an important player, and obviously Courtney Stockard was one of the most productive, you know, forwards in the league. Very good shooter, very good scorer. And, you know, some of these new guys are going to come in, and I think one guy that I'm real excited about is Bobby Planudis, if I'm pronouncing his name right. The three-point shooter transfer coming in. I think he shot something like close to 50% his last season from deep. So he could be an absolute lethal sharpshooter, but, you know, will his game translate to the A-10 level? And some of these new guys really come in and add the production that's going to be missing from those seniors.
Yeah, all good questions. I think when you're trying to project a team, one of the good great questions to always ask is, where are the points going to come from?
Yeah.
And outside of Lofton, I don't know where the points are going to come from. Osun, you know, he's not a standalone offensive contributor. You know, he'll get some rebounds, some putbacks, but, you know, he's not going to be putting up 15 a game. It's just not him. And otherwise, we just, you know, somebody's going to step up. We don't know who. We don't know if they're going to be efficient.
Mm-hmm.
So, one thing, sorry, fun stat I found. Osun had 7.5 rebounds and 2.5 blocks per game as a freshman. First A-10 freshman to do that since Yinka Dare.
Wow.
And you can collect your shoot bucks from the receptionist if you get that reference.
I do not.
Yeah, he's a 7-footer from GW who played in the NBA for a few seasons back in the 90s. So,
man, I'm too young to be on the show with you, I guess.
I'm actually too young, too. I only kind of get it myself. But, I think that's Bonaventure. I think we're kind of aligned there. So, moving on.
Number 6, Richmond. The Spiders coming into this year with actually a decent bit of hype, you know, despite some shortcomings last season, despite the whole billboard incident and obviously the Fire Mooney Mafia, you know, making a whole big deal on Twitter. But I think some of this hype is very deserved. The Spiders, I would argue, are bringing in the most talented starting five in the league. You've got a guy, Blake Francis.
That's a take.
That is a take.
More talented than VCU and Davidson?
I think all positions considered for the starting five, possibly. But that is a take as it comes out of my mouth. I'm not sure I want to actually say that. But
would you are you brave enough to predict Richmond to the tournament?
I am not, but I will say in my A-10 power rankings, I would have them 5th. I think the issue for Richmond is just going to be depth. I mean, I think we see a very similar team to what we saw 2 seasons ago. And that's where they had, was it 2 seasons ago? It might have been
the TJ Klein year.
Yeah, the TJ Klein year. So you got TJ Klein, Chandre Jones, Quan Ford, DeMonte Buckingham, and Nick Sherrod. I mean, that was an incredible starting five, right?
Yeah.
But outside of that, I mean, I think you had Julius Johnson coming off the bench, and then I don't know if anybody else earned more than like 6 or 7 minutes a game. So, I mean, those guys were getting absolutely worked out there on the court, you know, playing about all available minutes possible. But they were still really good. Won their last four games of the year, made it to the A-10 tournament, lost a really close game to VCU. So I think Richmond has a similar team this year. They're really going to have to put the pieces together, though.
Yeah.
One thing worth noting is that they beat Virginia Tech by 19 in a secret scrimmage, which I don't know what to make of that, but it sounds impressive.
They're struggling with Randolph-Macon in their exhibition game as we record this.
Oh, boy. Oh, my gosh. I need to retract everything that I've been saying, man.
They were up by 4 at halftime.
Oh, gosh.
I actually haven't checked my Twitter since we started recording, so maybe they're pulling away right now.
This is going to be you're going to have to Old Takes Exposed or something after this podcast goes on.
I was thinking the same thing. I mean, this team, they put a lot of shooting on the floor, you know. Blake Francis, he's a transfer from Wagner. So, you know, the caveat is Wagner is not the A-10. Mm-hmm. But Blake Francis shot 40% from three in his first two seasons. And if you combine that with Jacob Gilliard, who I think is perpetually underrated, the dude is a star. And if he was, like, 4 inches taller, everybody would be talking about him a lot more. But as it is, he, like, people look at him as kind of a novelty just because he's so tiny.
Yeah.
But Gilliard's awesome. Blake Francis can shoot. Nick Sherrod can shoot 37% from three. Jake Woschick, 36% from three. This team's going to put shooting on the floor, and that's when Chris Mooney teams are dangerous, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is that they're still trash defensively. Bottom 20% in the country in field goal percentage at the rim last year.
Yeah.
Bottom 10% in transition field goal percentage allowed last year. So they like, you know, a lot of turnstiles on defense, which is unfortunate because I do like Mooney's offensive system. Mm-hmm. I think it works nicely. I think he when he gets shooters, I think it looks pretty great. So, and I think he's got shooters this year.
Yeah.
So I think they could potentially overachieve if they can just not be so damn leaky.
Yeah.
On the defensive side of the ball.
I should retract my statement. I think most talented starting five individually at each position when you I don't even know how to say it correctly, but I think the bottom line is they've got five really good guys.
I think you can
guys.
Just cut your losses and say they've got a better starting five than people want to give them credit
That's
for.
That's fair. Thank you for that.
Okay.
I think at each position they have a very strong candidate to play, to be on the floor each time. I just don't know if they mesh well. Like you said, they don't play very good team defense. They don't offensive rebound particularly well at all. So they don't get a lot of second chance points, you know. But I think Jacob Gilliard continues to be the most underrated guard in the conference. He shot better than 60% last year from two, which is kind of unheard of for a point guard. But I think Richmond's going to be good this year. You know, people are going to be calling me out for whatever I just said, but screw it.
They're kind of popular as a sleeper.
Yeah,
And I think for all the reasons we mentioned, you know, for everything else, you know what you're getting a little bit more with Richmond than you do with other teams, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Other teams, you just have to do so much guessing and projection of all these new guys that we've never seen play, right?
Yeah.
But Richmond returns their core, you know. They had Sherrod, they had KO, they had Gilliard, they had Golden last season. So, you know, if you project each of those guys to be a little better than last year, then, you know, boom, you've got a team that's pretty good with a chance to be even better.
Yeah.
So I think that's where it's coming from. That's sort of the theme with Chris Mooney teams recently have been that they light it up offensively, but they're just a sieve defensively. And I think that might be exactly what happens. But, you know, if they can figure it out on the defensive end, then watch out.
Let's move on to number 7, the St. Louis Billikens, reigning A-10 tournament champions. However, the Billikens lose two very valuable pieces in Tremaine Isabel and Javon Bess. And my big question from St. Louis, and I think this is the question for a lot of these teams, is just where the heck is the scoring going to come from?
Where do the points come from? They return about 30 points total per game from last season. Most of that's from Jordan Goodwin and Hassad French, which is not a good sign because those guys are not scorers.
Yeah.
Simply, you know, carrying the scoring load is simply not what those guys are designed to do. It's not their game. So I think it's a great question. I know we had our buddy Jack Godar on the podcast earlier this season. He gave us a great preview of St. Louis. He's really high on their freshman Terrence Hargrove Jr. I think Hargrove is one of the best recruits to come into the A-10 this season. But you know, lots of new faces and lots of guys that didn't play much that are going to be thrust into contributing roles. So generally not a formula for you know, a top four season there. I think middle of the pack's probably right because they got a lot of physical talent. Goodwin and French are both very good players. It's just going to be – it feels like it's just going to be the same old kind of rock fight St. Louis team that that we've been used to seeing over the past few years.
And I think worth noting, too, what's interesting is as bad of a team as St. Louis was from behind the arc last year, they do not return a single player who attempted more than 100 three-point shots last year. So if you want to talk about uncertainty from long range, Jordan Goodwin is the leading returning three-point attempter, if that makes sense, with 95. And, you graduate Bess, who shot 203, Isabel, who shot 166, and Wiley, who shot 104. So,
And Goodwin shot 26% from three last year, which is terrible.
And Fred Thatch was just about in the same boat. I think he was 27%. So
Thatch could be good. Thatch is one of those really big-bodied guards that's always interesting because those are the kind of guys where if they figure it out, something clicks, those guys are so hard to stop.
Yeah, and I think Fred Thatch, too, was one of the most underrated defenders in the A-10 last year. I mean, I know Javon Best got much of the hype, and it was deserved. But I remember in some of those non-conference games when Bess was not on the floor, I think the Seton Hall game on the road, Thatch was the guy that was defending Miles Powell and was actually doing a pretty good job. And I think he got some of the tough assignments but didn't get all the praise. He should help the Billikens defensively and should emerge into more of an offensive role this year too. At least somebody's going to need to be, and I think Thatch is a good candidate for that.
St. Louis is so interesting to me because, Travis Ford was such a great – he was a great shooter at Kentucky. He was, over a 90% three-point – or, sorry, over 90% free-throw shooter, over a 40%, I think, three-point shooter. And his teams at St. Louis have just been some of the worst shooting teams of the decade. Year after year, they're such a terrible shooting team. And it's just – it's so interesting to me because it's such a – it's just the opposite of how he was as a player in college.
Right. So, fun team to watch. I mean, I think they'll be middle of the pack, just like they're ranked. Seventh might be a bit high, in my opinion, but it really just depends on offensively how they're coming together.
They just lose a lot of scoring. We don't know where the points are going to come from, and it's always like those teams are always crap. Those teams are always crapshoots when you don't know where the points are going to come from, and they're very, very rarely finish in the top five or six.
But let's move on. We've got number eight, Duquesne Dukes. Duquesne was going to be ranked pretty high coming into the season had they not lost their leading scorer, Eric Williams Jr., a really, really big loss. He's out at Oregon now. But the Dukes do return some star players. You've got Sincere Carey, who had a really, really breakout freshman season with the Dukes. Tavian Dunn-Martin, I think one of the better better shooters in the conference. Had some big games, had some not so big games, but should emerge into a more solid role this year. And then you guys got guys like Marcus Weathers and Michael Hughes that come back and give this Dukes team a pretty solid starting five.
Yeah, I want to like him more, but Eric Williams was so good last year. Mm-hmm. Eric Williams shot 37% from three. He averaged, 15 and 10?
I think it was something like that,
I'm embarrassed. I don't have it in front of me, but he was such a well-rounded player. I think he was the kind of guy who was even though everybody knew he was good, it still kind of felt like he was underrated. So 14 points, 7.5 rebounds, but, 1.5 assists over a steal per game. And he's doing that shooting 37% on three, being Duquesne's highest usage player. Dude just filled it up and was all around a really, really, a really complete player. So I think losing him hurts. I know that, I like Sincere Carey. I like Michael Hughes. Michael Hughes, along with Ladarian Griffin, was one of the founding members of the Hey 10 All Underrated team. Because Michael Hughes, when you watch the game, Michael Hughes' impact is just tremendous, even though a lot of people still don't know the name. But, it's just, it's tough to like them too much because I think they got a lot of guards and they got Michael Hughes as a forward. I just don't know. I just don't know how it all comes together,
Yeah, they're a pretty small team, even though they've got some big guys that really just don't play that many minutes. One of the worst defensive rebounding teams in the nation, 350th, according to KenPom. So that was a big issue last year. I think
really, that's kind of shocking.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head though that they're just very guard oriented, and if guys like Tavian Dunn-Martin aren't filling it up from deep, since, you know, Sincere Carey is obviously known a little bit more for his distribution abilities than scoring, but I think it's just one of those teams where if they aren't hitting their shots, they're not necessarily winning ball games, and not the most sound team in the A-10 defensively either, so that should be a focal point you know, for Keith Dambrett moving forward. But I would have picked them a bit higher than eighth. I would have said maybe seventh, flip St. Louis and Duquesne around, but it's pretty speculative.
Yeah. Yeah, so they're another team where the three-point shooting takes a hit because, believe it or not, Eric Williams is actually their best three-point shooter. Or I guess Lamar Norman on a lot lower volume was also around the same percentage. But, you know, Sincere Carey, not a he's under 32%, not a great shooter. Tavian Dunn-Martin, 34%. Like you said, incredibly streaky, 47 for 137 from three. All 47 makes from three might have come in like the same 10 games.
Yeah, you're right.
He was so streaky. I mean, I'm kind of like, to me, Eric Williams was like, he was like the straw that stirred the drink last year. He papered over so many other things for that team, and I don't really know how it looks. You know, when it's Sincere Carey running the show, you got Michael Hughes in the front court. Just a lot of question marks. Man. Yeah. A lot of question marks. I don't.
Final thing worth noting for Duquesne, they don't play a true road game until Wednesday, January 8th, when they play at St. Joseph's. And according to KenPom, their first projected loss is actually January 5th at home against Davidson. They have...
Good for them.
They have a better than 50%. This is KenPom, so, you know, it's not great preseason. But apparently have a better than 50% chance of winning every single non-conference game that's listed on their schedule right now. So
go in the Fordham route.
Yeah, go with the Fordham route. So some decent mid-major opponents in there. I would highly doubt that they're going to win every game in non-conference. But, you know, at least have some tune-up games and at least have a chance to hopefully notch some wins before A-10 play starts.
The other thing we didn't mention is that Sincere Carey has knee problems. So I have we have enough questions with this lineup as is, but if Sincere Carey misses any games, and I'm not hoping he is, but you know, he missed a few games last season just because his knees hurt. He's got some sort of chronic condition. I have no idea what this team looks like when Sincere Carey's on the bench this year.
I'd agree with you. Yeah, it's gonna be interesting. Definitely a team to watch, definitely a team with more question marks than most, but somewhere in the middle of the pack seems right. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
Let's move on to your squad, number 9, George Mason. I don't know if you've had a chance.
We're back, baby.
Don't know if you've had a chance to see them in person yet in any of their exhibition games, but obviously tough news to hear Justin Kyer will be missing some time with an injury. What do you think about the Patriots? I'll let you take it away.
Yeah, you know, I'm coming around. I'm coming around. And no, hear me out. I've got a very well-crafted Homer argument here about Mason. Everything went wrong last year, like literally everything. Otis Livingston II, he was hurt. He was not himself down large stretches of conference play, and I think that was pretty obvious to everybody watching him night in and night out. I mean, I was getting messages from other A-10 fans who are like, "Hey, what's up with Otis?" And I think the dude was just hurt, and he clearly wasn't the same player that he was the year before. The Jared Reuter experiment just did not work at all. I think there's, you know, I don't want to pile on the kid, but I think there's some addition by subtraction that's going to happen. Mason was one of the worst teams in field goal percentage at the rim allowed last year. Mm-hmm. Defensively, just a lot of traffic cones. You know, you could blow by our guards, and we had no rim protection waiting when you got around them. So I think that there's no way that that doesn't improve last season. And I think that, you know, I think that we're going to see a lot more Jordan Miller. Jordan Miller was the, you know, surprise revelation of the season. He was this skinny, lanky freshman. He's a local kid. He was supposed to redshirt. Nobody was expecting anything from him this year or anything from him last year. And it turns out he's really good, and he's actually probably gonna play the three a lot more. We had to kind of shoehorn him into a front court spot, but his natural position's on the wing, so he's gonna play on the wing a lot more. I think that'll be fun to watch. It'll be our first season without Otis, you know, dominating the ball in years, which I think is gonna open up some opportunity. And then sometimes at points the offense is gonna look atrocious, and we're gonna look like we don't know what we're doing. But at other points, you know, I think the ball's going to Hartwell can do. Yeah, I think he's sort of the new, you know, he's the guy who's going to take over the point guard role. And I think we got some good continuity otherwise from all the guys who are supposed to come back. And also whispers around the program are that AJ Wilson, who was a he's been an athletic freak for his couple years here so far, but he hasn't quite put it together in terms of contributions on the court yet. There are whispers around the program that, you know, he's getting it finally and that he's ready to contribute. So he looks like he's going to start this year, actually. So I think you're going to see a lot of athleticism from Mason that we didn't have last year. I think you're going to see shooting from Mason that we didn't have last year. And defensively, by a lot of different metrics, there's no way we're going to possibly be any worse. So I'm kind of talking myself into Mason potentially being a surprise team this season.
Well, there you go, folks. I'm going to walk down the street and lock in my bet for Mason winning the national championship this year. No, joking aside, I agree with a lot of your points. I'm pretty high on Jamal Hartwell. The way he played at the end of the year was impressive. And I know it wasn't a lot of attempts, but he shot 44.6% from three last season, which is huge for a team that historically has not been a good three-point shooting team under
Dave
Paulson.
Which is weird because Paulson always had good three-point shooting teams at Bucknell. And at Mason, it just he's never had a good three-point shooting team. It's just bizarre. And I mean, I'm gonna ask him about it next time I get him one-on-one. But I think a really, really excited to see what Hartwell contributes. I'm sort of excited to see what the squad looks like. A lot of new faces. A lot of new people will be contributing.
Yeah, and you guys have five straight tune-up games realistically to start the season.
I hope so.
Some room for error and some room to.
Last year, this is probably a subject for a Mason pod, but last year sucked so bad because we had all these like dreams of an at-large bid, you know, and then just we lose to Penn, we lose to American, we lose to Georgia Southern in the first three games of the season, and the season just being
season was shot right there. Yeah,
like, it's one of the worst feelings.
Yeah. Can't be worse than that, but looking forward to it for you, and I hope Mason does turn some heads this year because they do have the pieces to be a good team, I think. Let's move on to number 10, the LaSalle Explorers, and we're kind of getting toward the end, so we'll speed it up a little bit because there's a few teams, a few games we want to talk about for this coming
week. Didn't LaSalle almost lose their exhibition game last night? Yeah.
They did. Yeah, it was sneaky. I was just kind of paying attention to it, and all of a sudden I looked on Twitter and I saw LaSalle's account tweeted something about a big three-point bucket that put the team up four with like a minute
left
to play.
You shouldn't be hitting big three-pointers in exhibition games.
Yeah. And I can't remember who they play. I mean, they're all the same in these exhibition games. They're all terrible teams. So I don't know exactly what happened in that game. I wasn't there. I wasn't able to watch it. I think David Beatty had 19 points. I think he was the best player on the floor for LaSalle. You know, LaSalle is one of those teams that really should be making a step up this year. I mean, guys are just getting older. You got two seniors that, you know, have been really good, and Isaiah Dees and Saul Fury, and, you know, should be taking the next step for the Explorers. I just kind of have yet to see this team really turn the corner. I mean, you know, last year they started 0-10, and some of their fans on Twitter were still trying to hype them up, and I'm kind of like, I don't know. I think LaSalle can be good, especially at home. They tend to play pretty well against some of the better teams in the conference. I just don't know if I see them finishing higher than 10th or 11th.
Did you remember they had a stretch where they won 5 of 6 in the A-10 last season? They were six and five in the A-10 at one point. Yeah.
Yeah, to be fair, it was against Fordham, Massachusetts, St. Joseph's,
Duquesne,
Richmond,
and
Duquesne.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, those are 5A-10 teams. So.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah, I think we're thinking the same thing. They could be fun. I'm excited to see what Ashley Howard can do in year two. I think still, you know, a year later, I don't think they realistically could have done any better for a coaching hire than getting a guy who'd been a top assistant on two national championship teams in the past 3 years.
I think you're right. Final pitch I'll make for LaSalle. I really like Jack Clark. He played really limited minutes last year because he got hurt. But he had a game where he put up 21 points, shot 10 of 12 from the free throw line against Bucknell. Had 14 against, I think it was St. Louis, in A-10 play. Really put together a good string of scoring in like only 10 That's games that he played last season. Shot 41% That's from three. I think he'll be a pretty good player for LaSalle. Yeah. But I think that's the Explorers. We'll try to get through the last couple of these. We got Massachusetts. The Minutemen coming into the season with a lot of new faces, especially in the freshman department. And I think a lot of fans on Twitter seem to be kind of mixed about this UMass team. And I mean, I've seen people really put them down and say, oh, it's going to be a total rebuilding year. And I've seen people say,
UMass too low.
Yeah. You really do. You can't have them 13th or 14th in this day and age. But I think the big talking point is obviously Trey Mitchell. I think he's maybe the second highest rated recruit. Really depends what site you're looking at, coming into the year in the A-10. And he should be a dominant forward down low and really get some good experience and minutes in a year where Massachusetts does not have a lot of returning experience.
Yeah, I think UMass, they're relying almost entirely on Cy Chapman and Samba Diallo taking sophomore leaps, right? Like that's mm-hmm. most of it. Because I think that's everybody else is either like Carl Pierre is a known quantity. You know, he's a nice player, very one-dimensional. You know, he's a three-point shooter and he's a good three-point shooter, but he does almost nothing else. Mm-hmm. You know, he doesn't get rebounds.
Doesn't turn the ball over,
which is good, but he doesn't get steals. He doesn't get blocks. You know, 1.4 assists per game, 2 rebounds per game. He's a shooter. You know, he doesn't really do anything else.
Sure. Sure.
And so, you know, you're hoping, and through 2 years, he's unlikely to develop another dimension to his game at this point. Guys like Laurent, right. Cobb, Holloway, Luann Pipkins, like they all left. So I think you've got Clergio is the only other guy besides Pierre who got minutes. And then it's Chapman and Diallo who were freshmen last year, and you're just hoping that those guys take leaps. So, again, lots and lots of question marks, not a lot of points returning. You're just, you know, just so much projection involved. It's easy to see why they've been picked for the bottom four here.
Pretty much, yeah. We'll see what Matt McCall can do and if he can put some pieces together. I mean, it's a clear rebuilding year, though, and I think it'll take 2 or 3 years for some of these guys to be good, but you know, if Chapman and Diallo really do take big steps up sophomore year, and these freshmen are as good as advertised, yep. I think you look 2 years down the road and you've got a Massachusetts team with a really strong senior and junior class that has a chance to.
And they certainly could. I like both of those guys a lot. I like their games a lot, but they combined to average 7 points per game last season. So it's just we're just guessing.
Just haven't shown it yet. Sure. Let's move on to number 12. We got George Washington, the Colonials, with the new head coach, Jamie and Christian, coming in to coach. Now, the Colonials, they return a decent bit of talent. Obviously, they lost Terry Nolan, which was a huge hit. But Arnaldo Toro was a guy that, you know, a guy that I'm pretty high on and I think would have contributed a lot last year. Unfortunately, went down with a season-ending injury. But he's going to be back for this team along with some other pieces. How do you feel about the Colonials right now?
Ambivalent. I think they're picked correctly. I think they're going to be one of those games you just hope you don't lose this season, you know. I think Jamie and Christian, his teams, I think they play a lot of ISO, which is interesting. His Mount St. Mary's team's always very low assist percentage. On offense, and I don't know if they have the personnel to pull that off right now. So it's going to be, you know, it'll be an interesting, you know, adjustment year. I think they lost some talent. I think, you know, they're rebuilding. This is the sort of year where you punt. You don't expect to be very good.
Yeah. Speaking of adjustment year, I mean, I think Amir Harris is a guy, a transfer from Nebraska that's sitting out this season that's supposed to be pretty good. So, you know, he comes around next year and adds a lot for you, as well as I've been hearing good things from Jameer Nelson Jr., the guy that decommitted from St. Joseph's once Phil Martelli got canned. And, you know, you give those two guys, you know, a year, and I think George Washington could have a pretty solid backcourt going into the 2020-2021 season. It's going to be a mouthful when we eventually get there in time. But, it is kind of a transition year, but we'll see how the new head coach is able to handle things. I'm kind of in the same boat. I think they're kind of right where they belong. I'd honestly maybe have them at 13.
And we can, and I think we can use that to segue right into St. Joseph's, which is in a very similar boat where it's like everybody who's going to be playing basketball for St. Joseph's this year was not playing basketball for St. Joseph's last year. Or I guess they still have they kept Taylor Funk. Taylor Funk's good. Anthony Longpre's good. Other than that, it's like I don't know. It's they're just question marks all over the place.
Yeah, you got Lorenzo Edwards is back. I think Miles Douglas is a transfer that could be pretty good this year. I saw a pretty good highlight dunk from him in the exhibition game. Ryan Daly is one of the players I'm maybe most excited to see play, just because he was a very high volume scorer at Delaware, I believe, and he's gonna be taking like 30 shots a game.
He's getting a lot of hype as a potential leading scorer in the A-10, right? Just by necessity.
And I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, yeah, you don't, this, you know, this roster doesn't run too deep. You've got a lot of guys sitting out, you know, with redshirt seasons, a lot of freshmen that, you know, we really don't know how good they're going to be. I can see Daly taking literally 15 to 20 shots a game, and if he can knock some down, it's like, yeah, why not? He could lead the league in scoring.
Yeah, I think that in the Taylor Funk's a good player. He's not going to be, you know, he's not a scorer, though. Does a lot of things well. Isn't going to carry the scoring load. Not his game. Same thing with Longpre. Same thing with Edwards. Everyone else that was good for them either, you know, transferred out or is going pro or just left the program.
Let's move on to number 14, the final team, the ranked too high Fordham Rams. How do you feel about Fordham this year,
I can't decide if I want
Petey?
To retire the Fordham too high joke or if I want it to live forever. Because it's almost like, you know, when on Twitter, it's like if you post any ranking, no matter where Fordham is, somebody says Fordham's too high. It's almost like if you post anything with the number 69 in it, somebody says nice. Oh.
So that's pretty much how it goes with A10 Twitter now, yeah. I'll make a pitch for Fordham's front court. I think they've got a few key pieces that might be able to step up this year. They've got a center, Joel Soriano. He's 6'11", 250. He has a lot of size down low, and I'm not going to pronounce this right, but Onyi Ayisi, I think is his name, is a rising sophomore center as well. He's a 6'9", 225 guy, four-star recruit out of high school, and he played pretty well in Fordham's exhibition game. And you obviously got like Chuba Homs down low. You got three big guys. you got three big guys that, I don't know, might add something in the front court. But, you know, Fordham lost Nick Honor, who was their biggest asset since the last guy who transferred after freshman year. So
it's
going to be tough.
It's going to be tough sledding, per usual. Jalen Cobb's coming back, right?
Jalen Cobb is coming back. Yeah, leading returning scorer for them, I believe.
It also says Portley's coming back.
No, Portley is coming back as well. So, I mean, you got two good players.
I'm seeing one. Their roster says Portley's there, but also College Basketball Reference says he was a senior. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It's Fordham. They're going to be terrible. Chuba's always interesting, though, because I feel like each of the last three seasons I've seen Chuba, like, make one really nice play. And then I go look him up because I was like, damn, that looked pretty nice. Who is that guy? Like, he's going to be a player. And then it's Chuba, and he's been there forever. And he's like, once every few games, he makes a really nice play. And then he packs it in and waits a few more games to do it again.
Dude, he was the best defensive rebound in the A-10 last year, though. Yeah, statistically, at a 30.4% defensive rebounding percentage in KenPom. And, I mean, I'm looking at his stats in his final couple games. I mean, even in the A-10 tournament, he had 0 points against Richmond, but grabbed 13 boards
and had
six block shots. So realistically, he's good, just not much
of a scorer.
Really
interesting. All right, I think we've talked Fordham to death. So
let's do it. Let's move on to some of the games of the week to watch. I cannot believe we're finally here. And we're finally saying this. I want to touch briefly on two this week that I think stand out in all A-10 fans' minds. First one we're going to talk about is the big one for me, the Davidson versus Auburn game, starting this coming Friday, so like 5 days away from when you
Auburn
hear this podcast.
Auburn was a Final Four team last season.
Samir
Gowdy, former VCU player, fouled Kyle Guy on a three-pointer in the final seconds to, handicap Auburn's chances of actually going to the national title game. What do you know about what this Auburn team returns?
So I know Auburn loses its top three scorers from last year. Bryce Brown was obviously their best player. He was a senior, so he graduated. And then Jared Harper and Chuma Okeke both left for the NBA. So you're losing three guys who average more than 10 points per game. I'm honestly a bit surprised to see them as a top 25 team preseason. I mean, I wonder if that's a little bit of just the returning hype of, first of all, guys in the AP poll. I don't know what they base some of their stuff on, but like every preseason AP poll, you see like Cornell got a vote. Like who the hell is voting in these things? It makes no sense to me, but they tend to get it right decently. I don't know if Auburn's going to live up to this hype as much. Samir Dowdy's returning. I think they've got a few pretty decent freshmen coming in, but they are losing a significant chunk of their scoring from last year. So I don't know if the whole hype on the top 25 preseason right now is just, you know, they were a Final Four team last year, so they got
it. You think your Davidson boys start getting votes if they pull out a win?
I would think so. I mean, well, they have been getting votes already. So, you know, more you go up now. At a neutral court, you beat. Yeah, I think if you go up on a neutral court, you beat Auburn, you might propel yourself in the top 25. I mean, I think that might be one of those replacement things where it's like, okay, you know, fringe top 25 team beats a top 25 team that's just barely in, and maybe they flip flop. But honestly, that doesn't really mean anything. Auburn could be good this year. They could not be good this year. I think they're probably going to be a solid contender in the SEC, although I know there are a lot of good schools, especially Florida and Kentucky, that are both top 10. But either way, it'd be a big win for Davidson and a way to boost its resume, because typically Davidson has not been good at getting non-conference wins and securing itself in a good, you know, at-large position heading into
conference. What are you
going
to be looking for from your boys?
I'm going to be looking for Kellen Grady, honestly, bouncing back and having a big year. It kind of felt like Kellen Grady last year in the games where he wasn't injured, that were big games for the Wildcats, tended to lag a little bit. Maybe that's more of a non-conference bias. I know he played really well against VCU. But I just thought back to that Wichita State game and non-conference play where he struggled a little bit, and John Axel, you know, carried the team in at 30-something points. We're going to have to see Kellen Grady bouncing back. He looked good in the red and black scrimmage. It looked like he was comfortable on his legs. He was jumping high, throwing down dunks. You know, missed a couple shots, might have been a bit cold, but, you know, this preseason scrimmage stuff means nothing. But I think Grady's the guy that the Wildcats are really going to need to ride this season, especially in some of these big non-conference games if they want to get the win. And I just think also depth in the post. I'm curious who is going to fill the role when Luka goes to the bench. I know Keyshawn Pritchett this year, he didn't play in the red and black scrimmage game. I know he's had
issues
the last.
He might not play against Auburn, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much he's going to be playing at all. I mean, he was in sweats at that scrimmage, and I know he's just had recurring knee issues
and
that
does Carter
just kind of
Collins
kept him
start
limited.
In his place?
I would think Carter Collins would be in the starting five. He's looking really sharp. You've got then three guards and maybe Luke Frampton at the four. So, I mean, Davidson's going to be playing a small lineup this year. It's something that they're used to doing in general anyway. I don't know if that's that much of a change, but it does put a lot of pressure on, you know, Luka to be a force in the post, defending the opposing team's five and really staying out of foul trouble. I think those
I'm
going to
be looking to see if Kellen Grady's driving to the rim. I think one of the biggest marked differences between healthy Kellen Grady and hurting Kellen Grady is he settling for threes? Is he taking a lot of step backs?
Yeah.
Or is he driving? So,
yeah, I think that'll be a good one. And obviously some huge tourney implications. So getting this win would be big for Davidson, a big way
for
to
sure.
assert itself and show that multiple teams belong in the A-10 conversation.
The A-10,
for
the
A-10 at-large
literally
this year.
Didn't win like any marquee out-of-conference games, right?
No.
Like, I don't think...
There was, I mean, VCU at Texas was the big one.
That was the one. And even Texas,
and then,
Texas was good but not great. They weren't... Yeah,
they didn't
even
make the tournament.
So, like, there were... I'm not exaggerating when I say the A-10 did not win any marquee games last season out of conference.
No.
Yeah.
So, no.
Hopefully we change
this would
that.
Be a good way to start the season for the league.
Rhode Island goes to Maryland.
Yes, they do. Top 10 team in Maryland this year. I know Maryland... they lost Bruno Fernando, but I believe they return Anthony Cohen, who is their starting point guard, really good shooter. I know he played well for the Terps in their NCAA tournament game last season. And I think Maryland also returns Jalen Smith, who was their 6'10" freshman last year. So really a talented team. I think projected to finish second in the Big Ten this year. going to be a very tough matchup for Rhode Island. What are you looking for the keys for the Rams to try to pull off some sort of upset in College Park?
Be looking for a couple of things from Rhode Island. First, I want to see if are they running the ball through Jeff Doughton? You know, are they moving Fats off the ball? Is Doughton running the point? I think they were a lot better last year when that was happening. I want to see what their shot distribution looks like. I think one thing that gives Rhode Island a kind of sneaky advantage here is that Cyril Langevin is, you know, he's a monster physically and athletically. You know, part of the reason he's such a cheat code in the A-10 is that guys that are that big and that move that well just don't usually come to play in this conference. So I think he'll be able to match a big part of the athleticism advantage that Maryland's going to have in the front court. Beyond that, you know, we're going to be looking at what does Rhode Island's three-point shooting look like. You know, they're going to need to probably splash at least 35% of them, I think, to hang tight here. Any more than that, I think they're probably in good shape. Any less than that, it's going to be tough to see them keeping it within 10 points.
Yeah. One interesting thing about Maryland before we move on last year, they were really bad at forcing turnovers. They were 352nd in the nation at defensive turnover percentage. So I guess a key there, if Rhode Island comes out of the gates a bit sloppy, I guess the good thing is that the Terps might not be that good at takeaways. I don't know if that's something worth noting. It's going to be a hard game either way, but it's going to be a fun one to watch. And, you know, obviously I'm going to tune in and root for the Rams and going to be all disappointed when they don't win. But, you know, they might. I don't want to set that in stone yet. We'll see. I think that's a good segue as well into, we're going to do a few questions from Twitter. I know we're running on an hour here, but we got a question from Gavin_Bicho, Bicho, something like that. Oh, God, that came out bad.
We got to
edit that out.
I'm
sorry, Gavin, man. We're going to answer your question really well because of that. I don't know how to pronounce your last name. But the question is, what is the ceiling for Rhode Island this year? And I know we talked a little bit about this earlier in the podcast, but I wrote an article on A10 Talk the other day saying, I think Rhode Island is an NCAA tournament team this year. I think that's one of my A10 hot takes. For me, the ceiling is getting like a 10 or 11 seed and sneaking in as an at-large if they win some of these key out-of-conference games. And then, you know, maybe winning a game in the NCAA tournament. That would be, I think, a huge accomplishment for this team that's really did struggle at times last year. This is a team that lost to Fordham at home. So obviously not the year David Cox expected, but I think the ceiling's pretty high. What about you?
Yeah, I would say top two or three team in the A-10. And again, for as much as we pick on Fats, if you like, let's leave him out of the equation for a second. They've got a premier front court player with Langevin. I think one of the premier guards in the A-10 with Doughton. And it's just, they just need to feature him properly. They had a great freshman class last year that's going to be rising sophomores. You know, I don't know if I would say I see a world where they're going to be better than VCU this year, but I think a top two, top three team in the A-10 certainly possible. And along with that, of course, an NCAA bid.
Yeah, and worth noting too that you know, Rhode Island has been the team that has historically been giving VCU headaches. So while I agree, I don't see them, you know, necessarily beating out VCU and you know, finishing first in the conference by any means. I know they do get VCU at home and VCU on the road this year, so those will be two games to circle on your calendar because the Rams and the Rams like to go at it. let's move on to the last question from Twitter, who we got from @Jive36. And Jive36 asks, who will have the best OOC record, and asks if it's Fordham. And I thought this was an interesting question, and I picked it out because I saw something on Twitter the other day. It was this guy who does this Hoop Vision Plus, does a lot of, it's like data analytics and does kind of coaching video analysis on college basketball teams. But he had a visual display of KenPom non-conference slates. And then I think he graphed that against teams KenPom ranking. And lo and behold, Fordham has the easiest non-conference slate of all teams in the conference. And I think this question of whether Fordham will have the best record at the end of non-conference play might not be
that far. And can I just ask all of our A-10 listeners to not get fooled by that again? Because Fordham was like 9-3 out of conference last year, and some people were like, oh, I don't know. But no, it's they're going to be terrible again. And, you know, they might have a pretty decent out-of-conference record. They probably will. You know, I don't know. What do they have?
Yeah.
Games? They're going to go like 8-4 something, 9-3 maybe.
I mean, their hardest game is against Nevada, which they'll probably lose. But it's kind of wild to me how they managed to get – like everybody schedules their cupcakes, but they schedule like the cream of the crop cupcake. I mean, they've got only Maryland Eastern Shore, who's 349, Marist, who's 338, Bryant 325, Tennessee State 317, Coppin State 348. These are all preseason KenPom ranks. I mean, they're playing like six teams ranked in the bottom 20 of college basketball.
It's a pretty impressive way to build out your schedule. And it's
like when Fordham has a projected 94% chance of winning a home game, it's like, okay, you know they scheduled easy.
Yeah, it's also how you know Neubauer is, you know, doing whatever is necessary in order to save his job.
Yeah.
But yeah, Fordham might have the best out of conference record. I would say like Rhode Island's out of conference record is too tough. VCU, I think, might get a vote for me because they've got like LSU and Purdue, I think, are their two ranked teams that they play.
Yeah. They got LSU at home and they have Purdue on a neutral court. And then I think the other two teams in that tournament are Florida State and maybe Tennessee.
Okay. So those are tournament games. But then other than that, they've got like Wichita State, Charleston, and a bunch of cupcakes after that. So if they are actually like a top 25 team and they win a few of those tough games that they have and they sweep the cupcakes, VCU could have like a top 15 ranking heading into conference play.
Yeah. But I will say, I think the sneaky, very, very tough game on that schedule is going to be Wichita State on the road. Wichita State, tough place to play. And I know the Shockers, I think, lost in the NIT tournament finals last year. So they really did get some momentum at the end of the year. I think they're returning a lot of their stars from last year. I mean, I think they lost Marcus McDuffie. But you know, they have some young talent, some freshmen that played well at the end of the year. I think that's going to be a tough game for the Rams, and if they can survive that one, then I'd agree, I'd also throw
Dayton in there. I think they've got Georgia, St. Mary's, and Colorado, and then lots and lots of teams that they should beat pretty easily.
Yeah, Duquesne too. Like I mentioned, no road games until conference play. So we got a few options.
We answered with four different teams that might have the best out of conference record. So
yes. Yes, and I botched Gavin's name. I will never do that again, Gavin. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Gavin Bitcho. all right, man. God. Any parting thoughts?
Oh man, I don't know. I'm just ready for the season to start. I'm ready for the speculation to end. I just want to watch college basketball. That's all I can say right now.
So I think check back here in a week or two, and we will update everybody on first couple weeks of out of conference play. And until then, thanks so much for stopping by, and we will chat soon.